to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin on this Labor Day holiday weekend. Joining me now on the phone is a good friend of the program, Chris Mooney, political scientist at the University of Illinois, part of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, a good friend of the program, a good friend of mine, and one who helped me out with what I call my charcoal starter story. Whenever I write a story over the Labor Day weekend for the newspaper, I refer to it as a charcoal starter because I know somehow somebody's going to end up using it to get the ribs going on the grill.
There you go.
Sorry,
you
right? Sorry, Chris. You're just no charcoal starter.
It reminds me of that old newspaper movie, 30, with Jack Webb. You remember that old one? And he goes on as a diatribe about, every morning our newspaper's wrapped up in fish from yesterday, but today it matters.
That's right. That's exactly yeah. Right. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to touch base with you on the show and talk about, you know, this is kind of the traditional unofficial kickoff of the fall intense campaign season. But in many respects, I think, you know, maybe that kind of title is gone by the wayside because of the era of the never-ending campaigns.
Yeah, that's probably true. It certainly is the case for political operatives and whatnot. If it ever wasn't true, was there a time when they put away campaigning? I don't know. But for the average person, they're not paying attention to it as much. They're getting exposed more to campaign commercials early on and to sort of discussion in the papers and whatnot. But really, it takes a while for people to really engage in the campaign. And, you know, over the course of the fall, you know, people will kind of get into it as time goes on. Some people not until the last minute. Some people never do, and they don't vote. So, So it's still worth thinking about. It's the period of time when the campaigns really sort of sharpen their message and put it out there. For democracy to happen.
That's right, the magic of democracy. But you know, mm-hmm. when you think about and it's been the case in Illinois. Always talk about the length of time between a primary and a general election and trying to perhaps compress that amount of time. But you know, when you, mm-hmm. you look at the focus of primary races, you're dealing with partisans. And, mm-hmm. you know, that a lot of folks aren't partisans. And so they're tuning out the campaign message. And despite the millions and millions of dollars that we've had in this governor's race for more than a year and a half now, the message still gets tuned out until the vast bulk of voters who aren't aligned decide they want to tune in.
Mm-hmm. Well, they used to say it didn't start until after World Series is over, but of course now the World Series doesn't get over until after the election, so they've changed, baseball has gone ahead and changed that. But you're right, I mean, people... one of the things I think on this particular race, especially for governor, and this is, you know, the governor's race in Illinois is always super important. The governor's office is the number one political office in the state, with the possible parallel track of the mayor of Chicago. I mean, you know, it's not the U.S. senators, it's not the members of Congress that matter around here. That's usually, you know, they send the idiot brother-in-law up to Congress. What matters is what goes on in the state house, and especially what matters is what goes on with the governor's office, because the governor is a single individual, has a lot of control over various things like some contracting and priority ordering of transportation projects and other things and especially this particular race, because this governor, whoever it is, will have basically a third say in the redistricting process that's going to go on and set up new congressional legislative districts for the decade of the 2020s. And that means that if the Republicans win this one, then they will have a seat at the table, because it seems highly likely that the Democrats will retain majorities in both chambers of the General Assembly. So this is the Republicans' one chance to have a seat at the table for redistricting and at least have a 50-50 chance of having some impact.
Well, and I mentioned in the Sunday story, and Governor Rauner has brought this up, I think, very peripherally. But to me, you know, as a Republican governor who has a not unified base, and to look for a way to try to energize Republican voters, I know it's a wonky subject. The redrawing of legislative and congressional district boundaries is kind of a wonky subject. But but very simply put, it's, you know, if Pritzker, the J.B. Pritzker, the Democrat, wins, and Illinois, as expected, maintains its majority of Democrats in the House and Senate, Republicans won't, it's not even a matter of having a seat at the table, they won't be in the room when those math lines get drawn. And, you know, we've kind of seen in this 10-year cycle from post-census where what the ranks of Democrats were in the legislature. You lose the governor's office. You also lose a major funding source for the Republican Party, and that could decimate the Republican Party and Republican lawmakers as we know it for, you know, for a long time.
Yeah, you know, the Republican Party's been on life support for a while in the state, and you know, largely because of changing demographics, and you know, maybe there's some personal issues involved, but I really wouldn't blame it on anybody in particular. I think the state has just been changing, you know, that means that their odds of winning a majority in either of the chambers, you know, have been low really for a couple of decades, and but that doesn't mean they can't win the governor's office. And, you know, even in a state that's, you know, as blue can be, it's possible for a Republican to win the governor's office and vice versa. So you get a situation like in Massachusetts, which is, you know, more Democratic in the presidential years than Illinois is. They've got a Republican governor. Maryland's the same way. They've got a Republican governor right now. So it can, you know, it can happen, and they can be successful, because both of those two governors I mentioned are very popular, especially Charlie Baker in Massachusetts. Very popular, very successful. The fact that we've got a Republican governor here is not super unusual. You know, you had a sort of series of events where you had, you know, the Robert Goyvich situation, then you had Pat Quinn kind of wandering around for a while, and so it was an opportunity for a guy with unlimited checkbook and a strong message to come here and swoop in, and he did, and he, you know, he barely won, but he did win, and he had an opportunity. You know, didn't pan out for him. Not everybody who wins is actually competent at running the, you know, doing the job, as we've seen at, you know, different levels of government these days.
Right, but I still think there's, you know, if you're trying to bring home that Republican unity, that the message of being, you know, Democrats could draw you out of existence. I mean, because I think first and foremost, you know, look, we're talking here at Labor Day about a Republican governor who is still trying to find a way to unify the party base, if it can be done.
Right, and you know, the redistricting argument is you're right about that. That's one thing that they could do, and in some sense, it's very similar to the Supreme Court argument at the presidential level with Trump during the election in 2016. There are a lot of discussion in Republican circles like, look, this guy's an idiot, you know, he doesn't really know what he's doing, he's probably a sexual assaulter, and he's all these other things, but he's going to put the guys on the court that matter for us, and that will be there for the next 40 years. You know, the guys like, you know, like the Gorsuch and you know, Kavanaugh, that I think his name is, they're trying to put
Brett
on the right
Kavanaugh,
one.
Right?
Yeah, right, another Irishman. You know, so... yeah, it's not, you know, it's not a sexy argument, but apparently it's been able to be made. And from what I understand from polling and whatnot, they have, the Republicans at the National have burned that into their base that, you know, Supreme Court is what matters, you know, overturn Roe versus Wade and various things like that. So it's potentially, it's possible for the Rauner team to burn that in. But at this point, they just, I don't know what they're doing. It's, you know, maybe they just haven't really rolled things out, but everything I've seen on him has been sort of really tacking to the right in terms of his, what he's been talking about in the media, and the commercials that I've seen lately have just been, you know, of the weirdest sort of conspiracy, spooky, you know, commercials you get in the last week, usually a campaign. So, you know, I don't know what they're up to these days. I can't quite tell.
We're speaking with Chris Mooney, political scientist at the University of Illinois and part of the Illinois University of Illinois' Institute of Government and Public Affairs. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Skyline studio overlooking the Chicago River and Lake Michigan. And on the phone, my good friend Chris Mooney, political scientist at the University of Illinois. We're talking about this being the unofficial kickoff of the fall, the intense fall campaign season. We were talking before the break about Governor Rauner and his bid for re-election and issues about trying to reunite conservatives. I mean, one other potent issue, I think, is, and it's the one that J.B. Pritzker, the Democratic candidate, basically created for himself, kind of the trick box that he created, was supporting a graduated income tax rate to replace the constitutionally mandated Illinois flat tax. But in supporting a income tax that taxes people at higher levels, at various income levels, he's not telling you what level, what rate should be applied at what levels. Says that that should be subject to negotiations with the legislature. But that also allows this kind of vacuum that the Team Rauner has been anxious to fill and exploit with fears that everybody's taxes are going to go up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the promise and the fear of progressive income tax in the state. It's funny that it's been such a debate around here at the state level. It's so intensive. I've heard a lot of, you know, angst from, especially from very rich people. I mean, not that I know a lot of very rich people.
I was going to say.
Time to time. And, you know, they're the guy, I'm moving to Florida. My God, I'm getting, you know, yeah, okay. So, it, you know, but the thing that's, to me, that's funny about it is that we've all been paying progressive income tax our whole lives at the federal level, and almost every other state does it. So it's, you know, it's a you know, the principle of progressivity is one of the pillars of tax theory. It basically the idea that, you know, the more you had, the more you should pay, and tax fairness, you know, among, you know, that people earn in, you know, macroeconomic 101 or whatever it is. So, yeah, it's funny that it is such a controversy in the state. I think that Rauner would easily could exploit this if he had anything else to say, in some sense. I mean, you know, they don't seem to be able to get their message together, and the fact that he's sort of thrashing around at the moment, and you know, really, you know, like you say, trying to, you know, sort of his biggest concern is shoring up that 25% of the electorate that's, you know, that's really conservative, that's going to vote for him, that's largely downstate and some of the exurbs, and he's not concerned about that 51st percent vote, which is the one that's going to get him all reelected. And you know, this whole thing with the progressive income tax, if he had a better message, if he had a closer campaign, if he didn't seem like he was flailing so much, he could probably make that argument. But you look at Pritzker's counter ad to this. It actually is quite, I think, effective. He said, look, Bruce Rauner's freaking out. Look, you've all been doing this for years. I should pay more because I'm rich. Rauner should pay more because he's rich. You should pay less because you're poor. You get that? I mean, so he does it in a very calm sort of sort of almost sarcastic response to Rauner, and the fact that he is rich allows himself to, you know, avoid the sort of class warfare argument that's going to be brought up by people who are opposed to this. So yeah, is it possible that Rauner could use this as a cudgel to beat on Pritzker with? If they could quit figuring out how to pound themselves in their own toes, yeah, they could.
So basically, I mean, when you look at, you know, the Rauner campaign, and let's be honest, every election with an incumbent, it's a referendum on the incumbent and on the incumbent's record.
And especially chief executive.
And without a lot of things to show for it, when you look back to the 44-point turnaround agenda that Rauner ran on in 2014 versus what we have now, and other than fears of I'm going to be the bulwark against a tax increase, or I'm the stopgap to prevent Republicans from being drawn into irrelevancy in the legislature, what is the message other than, you know, get rid of Mike Madigan and I still have a lot of work to do and let me do it?
Yeah, it's pretty shrill, and it's pretty it's an angry message. It's a message of frustration. You can tell that the governor is clearly not happy with what has occurred in the last 4 years. Probably not a lot of people in the state of Illinois are happy with it.
On either side.
Yes, right. So he's not happy, and you know, you can imagine this guy. You know, he comes up, he's super successful. He gets into Dartmouth, you know, and he makes tons of money. As you said in the campaign in 2014, he's been successful at everything he ever did, and now he's, you know, he just figured, well, I'm great at making money. I ought to be able to run the state. That should be no problem. He came to realize that running, you know, being a management of a government entity and being a manager of a private entity are way different things with way different goals. Running government is in some sense a lot harder because in private business, especially when you're in the sort of business that Rauner is in with M&A and so forth, it is clear what your goal is. It's very obvious. It's the bottom line. It's dollars and cents. It's
to
profit
make money.
And loss.
Right.
That's right. In government, what is your goal? What's the mission of government? That's the first question you ask yourself, and it's not an easy thing to define. So I think he's been a little bit lost, and he's frustrated, and he's taking it out on on everybody.
But why should, on the opposite side, why should anybody expect that J.B. Pritzker would be any different?
No reason whatsoever. He's exactly the same as Rauner was when he walked in. Here, I'm a rich guy. I must be smart because I'm rich. Vote for me and I'll set you free. I'll do all these pretty things. And, we have no idea if he's going to be able to do them or not. Just like we had no idea if Rauner's going to be able to do them or not. It is when you've got these, like I call them super rich neophyte candidates, right? They're so rich, they've got more money than they know what to do with, and they're willing to spend it on their own campaign, and they've got absolutely no experience with government. You know, I throw some money at a charter school or serve on a board or something like that. But when you're talking about chief executive of the state of Illinois, it is a big, complicated mess with huge problems. And, maybe J.B. Pritzker is going to come in here and be like the second coming of Christ. Or maybe he's going to be worse than Rauner. You have no idea.
Well, I mean, and that's in your description of these candidates, it's almost like how we've gotten into this kind of ridiculousness of we're parsing now. If you note from the Rauner camp that Rauner's, his wealth was earned and not inherited like Pritzker's. That's kind of
sure that's true. Yeah, get a small loan from his grandfather or whatever. from his Swedish grandfather. No, Bruce Rauner. It's funny when he's seen as the working class candidate in the campaign here. Holy cow! What a world are we living in?
What a world that we're living. Yeah, you got that exact. That's going to be the hallmark word for the day. What a world that we're living in. Chris Mooney, political scientist, at the University of Illinois. Thank you, as always, for joining me this morning.
Yeah, my pleasure, Rick. Don't forget, go down to Jazz Fest tonight. 235 people, can't be wrong.
There you go. Good, good point. We'll see you there.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back with more right after this.